2026 is here. A whole year, a whole new year lies ahead of us. Peter Major will be giving us hopefully some good news. I'm not so sure about that. But anyway, let's have a look at 2026 in this week's edition of the Mining Web Weekly. Well, one thing I do know that you're going to have a lot of pleasure from in 2026, Peter, and so are our tribe, is you are participating in our first ever investment masterclass ahead of the BizNews conference. So this year, the BizNews conference kicks off officially in the afternoon of the 10th of March, but the morning of the 10th of March, all our investment gurus are going to be there to explain exactly what they think is going on at that point in time. And you will obviously be taking us through mining. So I'm looking forward to that. But today we're looking at, for Mining Web Weekly, we're looking at mining specifically. It is right in the beginning of January, and it's as good a time as ever to say what might lie ahead for the sector. I guess we're starting off a very high point.
That's it. I'm inherently very conservative, very. And we are starting off on such a high point. I honestly can't see very much in front of me now that's likely to be higher at the end of this year. You know, last year, January, there was a lot of optimism and things were much more realistically priced. I thought gold was kind of heavy, but most of the equities, most of the metals were actually moderately, some were low priced. Well, everything's been carried around up, everything. If you've been in property, you must be up 40-some percent in dollars. If you've been in bonds, you're up 45% in dollars this year. If you've been in equities, you're up over 45%. Even the small cap and mid cap, which haven't really performed very well, they've been dragged up because the all sees like this enormous freight train and the slipstream it generates, everything gets pulled up. And do we say gold's leading the charge? Well, it did for most of last year, but the Aussies actually beat the gold now for the last few months. Okay, silver's kicked the hell out of gold, and yet gold's still touching all-time highs. So that just shows how high everything else has been pulled along. I'd hate to say what is going to be higher 12 months from now than right now. Honestly, I would put my money in cash, and we've got a graph here that shows where cash is relative to gold. That's it. You know, if you're wrong, you're not going to be wrong by very much. But
explain,
that's a scary graph.
Explain the graph in some detail, if you would, Pete.
Sure. This is the money market index versus dollar gold. And we know gold doesn't pay interest, and the money market does pay interest. That's all you're really putting your money in for, is to get the interest. And so this shows that if you bought gold anywhere in 1979, 1980, it's taken you 45 years to get back where you would have been had you left your money in cash. But now it shows, no matter when you bought gold, you've done much better than cash. No matter when you bought it, in the last year, 5 years, 10 years, 20. Now, we got a graph a little later here that shows gold relative to the S&P. Yes, you've beaten the S&P for the last 6-7 years.
Peter, before we go there, we must remember that there are many people who are listening only, so they don't have the picture in front of them. I would like to describe this as, it looks like a bit of a jagged V, where the top end of the V on the left-hand side, where it was clearly overpriced at that point, gold relative to money market, was around 1980. And we do recall, we've spoken enough about that big boom. The bottom of the V, the best point to buy gold relative to the money market, was, when's that, about 2006, correct?
2004 at bottom, 2004, early 2005. That's the lowest. Yeah.
If you'd bought it then, you would have outperformed the money market 8 times. Am I reading this graph correctly?
That's right. From 0.3 to 1.6, I'd say five and a half times.
Five and a half times.
And now where we're standing
is at the same top of the V as we were at in 1980. My goodness, if that doesn't send chills down your spine as a gold bug, well, then I don't know what would.
I agree. If this doesn't put chills in your spine, you are 100% gold bug, but it means you're a risky type fellow because you can't see anything.
Often, and you and I have been around long enough to see these trends in markets, often when the conversation with people who don't generally talk about investments, when that turns to investments, then you've got to realize that maybe we're getting too close to the top of the market. And with some pals of mine on Monday in the a group of golf guys that I play golf with, these chaps were starting to talk about the gold price. And what do you think about the gold price? And where's the gold price going? And I want to buy more gold. And I said to them, this seems to be the year when you've got to just pay a lot of attention to intrinsic value. Boy, did they tease me about that thereafter. What's this intrinsic value? And, oh, there's Alec intrinsic value hog and so on. So, Pete, there's something going on there. There's a bit of a flag waving for me. Am I being a little overly cautious?
No, you're being prudent. You're not being overly cautious. You're being cautious to prudent. Here's a simple way of looking at it, Alec. From 1980 until 2004, that's 24 years, gold fell relative to the money market. For 24 solid years, you didn't want to buy in gold. It was safer and better to be in the money market. Now, for the last 20 years, gold has continued to beat the money market. So it's kind of a big cycle, but these are secular trends. It's not cyclical like we've seen with most other commodities. These are 20-year secular trends, 22-year secular trends. But is it going to go to a 25? Hey, it might. But this is just really risky territory. This is like when a fighter plane has that radar that detects a missile's coming at it. It doesn't mean you're going to get hit, but it means you better have your eyes wide open and you better see, where is that missile? How far away is it? How much time do I have? And that's what's beeping here, that you've now got missile barrages locked onto you and you're in risky territory now by not doing nothing.
I've now brought up the graph of gold versus the S&P 500 index. And for those who are listening, it started at a level of around 1.5, went down to under 0.45. We're talking about in the late 50s, in 1970. Then it shot up to 6 times. That was in 82. Dropped again in 2002 to 0.19. So it got to the lowest point in this graph. Then shot up again to 1.5. And that was in 2014. At the moment, it's just above 0.45. Just explain this to us, Pete, exactly what it means.
Okay, if we go back to 1955, that's a pretty important year because that's when I was born. That's the year Einstein died. That's the year I was born.
So connection.
Very important year to start these graphs. So you're right, Alec. The long-term average of gold versus the S&P is 1-to-1. That's the average. But things don't sit at the average. They're either falling below the average or they're rising above it. So as you pointed out, the average over 45 plus 25, that's 70 years. The average over the last 70 years is 1-to-1. But gold got 6-to-1 back in 1979, 1980. And it fell from 6-to-1 down to 0.2 in 2002, 2001, 2002. Now it's back up to 0.6. So it's within a standard deviation, but it's not even at the mean yet. And what this indicates, equities are the known outperformers of everything. Whatever time period, over the long run, equities outperform. Huh? They're higher risk, but companies continue to grow. It's like the Peloton and the Tour de France. Nobody can beat the Peloton more than a race. because the peloton is constantly replacing the duds and the fast guys move to the front. That's what a stock exchange index does. It's dropping the laggards, the bums, it's putting in the new companies. So we expect gold to outperform here and there, but over time, equities outperform everything. Now, gold has outperformed the S&P for about 8 years, I think from 2016 until now. Yeah, in fact, that's 10 years. For 10 years, gold has outperformed the S&P. But can it continue to do that? Maybe for a little while longer, but over time, the S&P will catch it. Gold is the breakaway. The S&P is the peloton for bikers.
We also know that the S&P itself is getting a lot of focus on perhaps being overvalued. Let's move on to another graph, which is the gold price in rands this time against Steffi 3-month NCD rates. Explain that.
Yeah, it pretty much mimics what we saw with the S&P. So from the year 2000, the new millennium, when gold was 19 times the Steffi, it's now 120. So that's 6 times. So gold has outperformed the South African Money Market Index by a factor of 6 since 2000.
And that's gold in rands. It's just, again, rand, for those who can't see this, it is just a one-way. It's almost like you've taken a line on the bottom left of a graph and you've just taken it right up to the top right. It is a wonderful, not in a straight line, of course, but it has been a fantastic performance, 6 times outperforming the money market index in South Africa.
And I don't think that's happened in 120 years, Alec, that the gold price has outperformed the money market steady for 21 years without a break. So again, there's warning lights, buzzards. This is interesting, huh?
This is gold versus oil. So
gold versus
I hear people referring to gold and oil. Why should there be a relationship between the two?
Well, yeah, the Saudi Arabians, when they thought they were getting paid too much for their oil, they were rapidly converting it to gold. Just because very few assets continually go up. You know, they either get replaced or a lower cost of production comes up. So you can see gold versus oil, it was actually quite cyclical. The long-term average was 17. But look at the highs and the lows. You know, back in 2005, 6, 7, 8, 9, geez. Gold was only 7 times the price of oil. And look at now, it's 74 times. Only once in the history of man has gold been 74 times the price of oil. And oil is still pretty needed in the world. It just shows there's an abundance of it. It's not that we don't need it. It's not that we're using any less oil. In fact, we're using as much and more than ever. It just shows there's an abundance of oil. And if the gold price stays here much longer, we're going to find out there is an abundance of gold as well. But these are, oil is industrial use, or industrial commercial. What's driving gold? It's investment demand. And investment demand, as we found in America, is infinite. You know, look at all the trillions going into AI that might not even exist or barely exist. You know, whenever investors think, look at Bitcoin. You know, what's the fundamental demand of Bitcoin? But when people thought Bitcoin was a good investment, all of a sudden, tens of billions, hundreds of billions went into Bitcoin. That's what's happening now with gold. It's investment demand that's driving that price. But if there's any kind of reversion to the mean, this graph scares the hell out of me, that your long-term average gold oil is 17, and we're up to 72, 74, and we've only been there once in 100-some years. In fact, I think we've only been there once ever.
If you bring those 4 charts that you've shared with us together, what is your conclusion outside of gold's risky? And what I mean by this is, how far could it fall?
Geez, it could always fall half what it's gone up. That seems to be a rule of thumb amongst a lot of fund managers, Alec. That if something's run to 100, it can easily fall to 50. Gold has run to 4,500, could easily fall to 2,250. You know, let's go back to 1980. Gold was touching 800. It fell pretty quickly down to 400. Then it played around there off and on for many years. It eventually got as low as 250. So, yeah, I would stick with a rule of thumb. Something that rises like this can easily lose 50% of it because it's gone so much. And I think you can apply that to silver. Silver started the year at $30, and silver is now 80. So if it gives up half that 80, it's down to 40. Well, that's still the second highest, third highest silver's ever been. So yeah, there is huge downside. I think a guy risks losing more holding it right now than he risks if it keeps going. You know, if it keeps going, you can say, oh, I lost, but that was an opportunity cost. If you buy it now and it falls, that's not an opportunity loss. That's a hard, real loss.
And if you have a look at the silver price itself, the graph that you sent me to share with our community shows just one-way traffic. What has caused that, Peter? Because it's like the 1980 boom where it was a terrible spike and followed by a complete reversion to the mean from $10 to $80 back to $10. That we heard was because of Nelson Bunker Hunt and the attempt to corner the silver market, which went wrong. This time around, is someone also trying to corner the silver market?
Alec, I think this is a carbon copy of 1980. And I think the Nelson Bunker Hunt today would be China and a lot of its acolytes. And hey, I'm from Idaho. I'm not exactly a fan of Texas, but the Hunts weren't that politically popular back then. Texas wasn't that commercially popular with Washington, D.C. And the Hunts realized what a lot of us have realized ever since, that COMEX, the commodities exchange in Chicago, has a hell of a lot more shorts, and it's paper shorts, and it's not backed up by real metal. And the Hunts thought, this is an opportunity too good to pass up. So the Hunts started buying all the silver bullion and coins they could get without disturbing the market. Then they started buying shares in silver mining companies. Then they started buying futures and options on futures. They were going long on silver because they knew there were a lot more shorts out there than there were longs. And when COMEX found out what happened, when the Hunt said, hey, start delivering, you guys have shorted. Okay, we've taken the other end of it. We want to deliver. Well, COMEX didn't have it. So the game was up. So what do you do in America when the game's up? You try and rope in even bigger guys than yourself. So they flew to Washington, D.C., and they told all the legislators, this is going to bring down America like the Depression never did. It's all our enemies. And it's shysters and con men that don't care anything for the country. Well, naturally, they found willing ears. They probably lobbied hard and wrote lots of checks. And so they were allowed to change the rules. And they were allowed, instead of a 30-day delivery or a 3-month delivery or a 6-month, they could take a year, 18 months, 6 months. All of a sudden, they got to extend their delivery until they could make an alternative plan. In the meantime, the Hunts had huge holding costs because they'd gone so long. And I think that's what's happened now. Some entities, countries, traders, fund managers have said COMEX didn't learn any lessons there. They're really extended. And we know the two big banks that have loaned them money, they cannot cover these shorts. They don't have the stock. The warehouses are being drained. LME apparently has no more silver in. So this time, just running to Washington and letting them extend the contracts might not work. I think that's why silver is holding here a little longer at this high level than it did back then. But I think it's a very similar situation, Alec. It's too much paper trading centered on Chicago, backed up by New York and the banks.
Who would lose in all of this? The other story was Bunker Hunt and his brother. They got hammered, but who would lose here?
Yeah. They got hammered because they borrowed to go long and the silver price collapsed and people were able to buy the silver and deliver. And a lot of the silver they'd gone long on was at a lot higher prices than people had to deliver. You know, they'd gone long silver at 20, 25, 30, and 40. Well, once you collapse the price back down to 20, yeah, the Hunts lost that huge margin. So who's going to lose here? Look, if China is happy to hold their silver and not sell it, they could lose if the price eventually comes down. But if they're looking long-term to hold hard assets to back their currency, just like they're buying gold at $4,500, gold can fall, silver can fall. They're bullion holders, so they're not really bleeding. But if it doesn't fall, people who have written contracts, like the commodity traders, if they've written a contract to deliver silver at a certain price at a certain date, they have to scramble and go find that silver. Otherwise, they're in breach of agreement. People should go to jail. They should lose their house. They should lose their job. And the company could be a Lehman Brothers in reverse, could go bust. Their backers could go bust.
Well, how long is it likely to be before we see the fallout from this? Because clearly there has to be some day of reckoning somewhere.
I think it's 30 days, Alec. I think we have to see big legislative changes helping out the people that have written these shorts. You're right. This can't extend very long. You know, it didn't extend very long at the end of 79, early 80. So I think by the time of the Indaba this year, the big Cape Town Indaba, by 1st of February, I think there's going to be a lot of big announcements, going to be news clips, going to be interviews. Yeah, this isn't something that's going to drag on all year. I think it's going to get resolved in the next 30 to 60 days.
2026 is going to be an extraordinary year, and boy, has it started off that way. Pete, I know oil's not your sweet spot. Digging stuff out the ground is, but you must have a view on what's going on in Venezuela now and what might be motivating all of this.
Look, the first rumor to dispel is, did America go in there because they want Venezuela's oil? And that's a bullshit story extraordinaire. America did not go into Iraq because they wanted Iraq's oil. Saddam offered them all the oil in Iraq if they wouldn't come in. He offered to kick out the Russians, the Chinese. They turned him down on the first visit. The second visit, the CIA had with his Secret Service, they said, we'll even kick out the French and the British. We just want Saddam to stay in power. Saddam wants to stay in power. He'll kick everybody out, give all the oil assets to America. So America turned it down. I would have taken it. It's a great deal commercially for the United States, and it would have helped Iraq. But they turned it down for the dumbest of reasons, and they went in there, and they spent $2 trillion. They killed hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, killed thousands and thousands of Americans, and they left. They left without one barrel of oil. Well, Venezuela is similar to that. They did not go in for the oil. They don't need the oil. You probably read enough. It's not even clean, light oil. It's dirty, heavy oil. It needs more processing. It's more costly. But they went in for a lot of other reasons. They didn't like who was using Venezuela oil. Was it Russians whitewashing, laundering their oil? You know, all these mystery tankers. And there was, yeah, Venezuela, it was virtually a narco country, as are a few of the South American countries. You know, people are saying it's too bad South Africa is not a narco country. Maybe we'd also have something similar to that. But it wasn't about oil. And I know there's also a silver clipping going around saying all the silver that Venezuela had in its central bank and that it produces and that it had confiscated from all the producers. And they said shortly before the invasion, Russia and China removed all that silver. That's even a little more far-fetched. But without a doubt, it was not in the U.S. interest to watch a narco state use hard currency, gold and silver and oil, and help U.S.'s enemies. And they're trying to sanction Russia for invasion of Ukraine. And Venezuela was playing a big part in helping the Russians. They were playing a big role in helping the Chinese. And it's a narco state. 7 million people have left there, and they're flooding countries from the U.S. on down. They had a lot of reasons, but oil was not the reason.
Okay, let's come home and doff our cap to you, because in our Ricardo portfolio, you said it would be a good idea to put Orion Minerals in there. Well, Orion Minerals, after staggering along for a couple of months, has shot up. It shot up this week from, it was around 20 cents, then 21 cents. So a lovely little low price share for private investors. It went up to 27 yesterday. and that's when people weren't around. Are we now looking at something that's starting to get to its true value? And I suppose the second point is, why the jump?
The jump is, maybe it's like snow falling on the roof. It just keeps falling until the roof eventually caves in. It's like Alexander the Great invading Persia, and he had to bring his siege engines up to the castle walls. And you beat and beat for weeks, and you saw no indent at all. You thought you're wasting your time. But he knew from experience, just keep beating and beating. And once the crack's there, it goes quick. You blow the trumpets, get the men ready. Now it's going quick. Now, Orion's told us what their strategy is for years. They've been working towards there, Alec, but infinitesimally. The little bit of money they were raising, and they've raised a lot of money, actually. They've raised R1 billion in 5 years. And people are starting to say, this is looking like a lifestyle company. You don't seem to be getting any closer to production. You're now the biggest landowner of all the mining companies in Africa. You're like a kid in a candy store with a bunch of money. You got too many properties. You've got copper properties. You got nickel properties. You got zinc properties. You got great mines that'll keep. They're proven copper producers. You got a fantastic ore body at Prieska that's been drilled to kingdom come. Get mining, guys. But there was no big sign that they were going to get mining. They kept redoing feasibility studies, and they kept acquiring more properties. Well, finally, the board got the message. And literally a year ago, 11 months ago to the date, about the time of the Indaba, they said, we're making big changes here. We need to raise more money. The company's run out. But this money is going towards producing. This money's going to allow us to find producers, to find mine managers with proven production histories. They've got that at Tony Lennox, who was at Palabora, biggest copper mine in Southern Africa. Tony's brought on a few people he knows and trusts, also big copper miners. They should be able to do Prieska in their sleep. It's less than half as deep as Palabora. And it's got a beautiful, fat, solid ore body at the bottom of it, 30 million tons plus, wide, long, high. And the copper price has helped, Alec. So Tony says, I put my name on the block. I will be producing concentrate by Christmas 2026. The pressure's on him. But even better than the high copper price, which is fabulous. You know, copper's gone from barely 9,000 to 13,000. That means he doesn't need as much money to get the mine going. And in comes Glencore, who we know likes commodities. And they can't get enough commodities for that giant engine. They're having to fund mines. And then that locks in their commodity. So Glencore has come in, and they have offered $250 million, which is more than enough to build the mine and the mill and get production going. Triple Flags, an American streaming company, has offered $75 million for all the gold and the silver that's going to come out of that as a byproduct. So now you got $250 million from Glencore, $75 million from Triple Flag, and the IDC's in there. They've committed their percentage of the equity, and they said, we're very happy to give debt funding. So there's no excuse now. Orion's got more than enough money. They got to finalize the paperwork with Glencore, but Glencore wants it. And they're a known big player. It's going through. They will be producing rock and hopefully concentrate by December. And yes, whether the NAV is 75 cents or 85, and your NAV goes up with the copper price. So it may have been 75 cents a few months ago. NAV now is pushing a dollar. And yeah, these are incredible copper prices. The zinc price is even moving. Gold and silver, we've seen they've flown. So the cash flows in this mine are going to be huge. Big fat profit margins.
In our Ricardo portfolio, what we're doing there is rand cost averaging on the purchases so that you can get the timing issues out of the way. Every month you buy those stocks that are in the portfolio. At 27 cents from what you've just said now, 27 South African cents, you are still acquiring a share of Orion Minerals at a very reasonable level. In other words, we should not stop our buying program now. We continue to do that every month.
Yeah. To think, why would you stop? It's a beautiful asset. The ore is there. Anything short of a meltdown in commodity prices. And that mine was not predicated on prices higher than $6,000, Alec. First, it was $4,500. Then they upped it to $6,000. So that mine should give a good return on capital if copper falls down to $7,000. Because what will happen, the rand, it won't stay at $1,640. It'll go back to $1,840. You know, mines in South Africa have such an edge over all these first world mines. Because when the commodity price falls, our currency is the buffer. I remember in the 90s, those were 100-year low metal prices, 100-year lows. We had 120 companies on the JSE. And I think I did a study quick and dirty, something like 105 of them were paying dividends all through the 90s at the lowest commodity prices in 100 years. And that's what the South African Rand helps us do. Great ore bodies, good miners, and those mines were established. So a mine here for 100 years was the safest mining investment on the planet. You know, it's only the current administration and government that's turned that around. And they can't turn it around forever because they can't be around forever, despite what Zuma says.
Just to close off with, are there any bright lights on the horizon? And here I'm trying to edge you towards a comment on PGMs, Platinum Group Metals, South Africa's ace in the hole, if we get it right.
I am so afraid of those, Alec. They make gold look like a sluggo. If you've seen, for 10 years, the platinum price couldn't crack $1,000. What is it today? $2,400. You know, in 6 months, it's gone from $1,000 to $2,400. Palladium has gone from $800 to $1,800. Rhodium's gone from $5,000 to $10,000. The platinum guys are laughing themselves sick. And it was so different when Northam comes down for their Christmas dinner, usually last week of November. They were so somber 12 months ago. And Paul Dunn, look, he's very conservative. Best miner going, but very conservative. They were so glum and worried that this could go on for another year or two. They'll survive, but it's going to be tough. This year, 12 months later, the prices have doubled. And they gave us all the reasons the prices have doubled and should stay here. Well, a year ago, they gave us all the reasons prices had fell and was probably going to stay. Nobody knows, but it is investment demand again. It's people buying, you know, investors. It's not that all of a sudden car production doubled or somebody found a new use for it. Those three metals. Yeah, the smaller ones, iridium, osmium, ruthenium, they've gone up 10, 20%. It's the three that you can get a handle on. And just like gold and silver, people can get a handle on it. People are now buying copper. They're too poor for silver. They're buying copper ingots and storing them. So this is investor demand driving it. And unfortunately, that is more fickle and it can fall quicker than industrial demand.
Peter Major, our go-to man when it comes to anything to do with mining. And this has been your weekly episode of Mining Web Weekly. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.